Thanks Radio's update with Christian Jones.
Hello, fast to my good afternoon, 5 o'clock on Tuesday the 14th of April. Thanks to Chris Quirk for the past couple of hours. I'm Christian Jones and welcome to Update. 30 minutes of all the latest news, sport and travel compiled from the resources of Manx Radio's newsroom. On the way tonight, a rapid independent probe into bed capacity at Nobles has been launched after serious concerns were raised. The replacement Castle Russian High School won't be decided this administration, and mum whose son has a rare brain tumour is running the Manchester Marathon in aid of the NHS. All those stories and more, as always, drop me a message if you want to say hello. Text WhatsApp to 166 177, email studio@manxradio.com. But first, as always, let's get the latest news headlines read by Amy Griffiths. Fastamai, Amy.
Fastamai. The former infrastructure minister says she's expecting the cost of a new Castle Russian High School to be over the £70 million mark. Treasury Minister Chris Thomas told the Public Accounts Committee it's unlikely there'll be spades in the ground during the current administration. But Russian MHK Michelle Hayward says the longer you put it off, the more it'll cost.
I'm expecting the cost to be over the £70 million mark because it's been delayed so long now, costs have just been rising. But you can't make progress on these things unless you actively work at them.
Overall bed capacity at Nobles Hospital is going to be the subject of an independent rapid review. It's being commissioned by the Department of Health and Social Care after serious concerns were raised by medical staff on the site. Government insists there's still a very low risk of a meningitis outbreak on the Isle of Man following the death of two students in Kent last month. Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford adds there's no evidence before him which suggests any change in risk here that would warrant a change in policy. After her five-year-old son was diagnosed with a rare form of brain tumour, a mum on the Isle of Man will now run the Manchester Marathon this weekend in support of the centre that carried out his treatment. Rebecca Dalrymple says the support her son Hector and her family received at the Christie NHS Foundation was amazing. She says she knew early on that something was wrong.
Hector's a good sleeper and he always has been. And so when he started waking up saying that he had a headache, it felt like it was a red flag almost straight away.
Turning to international news now, and diplomats from Israel and Lebanon have begun their first talks in more than three decades. The meeting's taking place in Washington as Israel presses on with its war against Hezbollah. Meanwhile, a leading global finance group's downgraded predictions of UK growth as a result of the Iran war. The IMF's cut by half a percentage point is the biggest of any country in the G7 group of leading economies. And departing Bournemouth boss Andoni Iraola says it's the right moment to step away from the club. He's announced he'll leave this summer at the end of a season in which they could qualify for Europe. Those are your headlines. I'll be back with the news in full at 6.
Amy, thank you very much, Gurumayad. Let's take a look at the weather now, brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. Outbreaks of rain and drizzle becoming more persistent this evening and tonight. Some dry interludes into the early hours of the morning, although remaining cloudy throughout. Tomorrow, though, a band of rain arriving in the morning, clearing around midday or early afternoon. Sunny spells then developing, but the risk of an odd shower later in the day. Top temperature of 13 degrees Celsius.
If you're looking for supply-only double or triple glazed units, make sure you visit the Manx Glass and Glazing Showroom on the Stagborough Trading Estate or call 674 573. You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
4 minutes past five. Let's begin with what's happening at the hospital, because an independent rapid review into bed capacity at Nobles has been launched. It's been commissioned by the Department of Health and Social Care after serious concerns were raised by medical staff on the site. Lewis Foster has this report.
In early March, a group of 75 senior doctors and consultants who make up the Medical Staff Committee called for immediate government intervention amidst what it described as a critical shortfall in inpatient bed capacity. It claimed that prior to the formation of Manx Care, Nobles Hospital operated with 314 beds, but the operating model had reduced that number by 46% to just 168 beds. Whilst acknowledging there are pressures in the system, Manx Care CEO Theresa Cope disputed those numbers.
I would want to make sure that the public understand that we haven't taken beds out recklessly. They have all had an evidence base behind. We are planning carefully for the future and the different models of delivery of care and doing that work. And some of the additional budget that we will have received in this financial year moving forward will enable us to stabilise the position, put more beds in the community, more frailty pathways, and really deal with the level of demand that we are seeing. Some of the fundamental issues come back to the estate.
Announcing this review today, Health Minister Claire Christian says it builds on recent engagement with the Medical Staff Committee and Manx Care's initial actions to manage and mitigate pressures on hospital bed capacity and ensure services remain safe, high quality and responsive. She says with the collaboration of a small working group consisting of frontline clinicians, the Manx Care Board, Medical Staff Committee and the British Medical Association, the review will reflect key stakeholder and professional input. The DHSC points towards measures which hopefully should provide some relief, such as the eventual reopening of Ramsay's Martin Ward and the new Emergency Department Clinical Decisions Unit, which is due to open by the end of May. The Martin Ward has been closed since October 2025, of course, to allow remedial works following a pest control issue in part of the building's roof space. As for just how rapid this review will be, we have to wait and see. We've approached the Department of Health and Social Care and Manx Care for further comment.
Lewis Forster reporting there. Now, newly elected MHKs look set to be the ones making the decision over whether to fund a new secondary school in the south of the island. Treasury has confirmed it's very unlikely a Timwell vote on funding for the replacement of Castle Rushen High School will take place during this administration. Of course, with a general election on the horizon, it means securing the cash for the educational establishment will be a hurdle for the new contingent of politicians. With this report, here's John Moss.
Well, what do we know about the progress of this mega project? Daphne Kane, the Education Minister, has said in the last few weeks there's no finished design yet. She was asked to publish plans and reports about the project in a question from a written reply from Honken MHK Julie Edge. She produced images released by construction firm Atkins Realis at the end of February, but she said those illustrations were concept drawings and the design is an ongoing process that isn't finished yet. So, where are we? In 2012, Bemahague School opened, replacing Park Road School, St Ninian's Lower. Its cost was £34 million. A figure was suggested a while ago for the projected Castle Rushen School of £44 million, but time has passed since then. Last week, the Treasury Minister and his key officers appeared before the Public Accounts Committee, and the chair of the committee, Joan Watterson, one of the Southern MHKs who'd been pressuring for a new school, asked Treasury Minister Chris Thomas...
It seems easier administratively to kick it down the road for being too expensive, but when it does come back, it's just going to cost even more money.
So what's the figure in your head? How much is it going to cost?
Well, I'm not a quantity surveyor. I don't know what it costs to build a school, but what I would hope for as Treasury Ministers, you might have some idea in your mind as to how much there would be available for it.
Well, no, we can make money available if it goes after the end of the process, subject to the will of Timwell, because obviously that's the way that they'd find out their budget. The Treasury Act is written in terms of use of public funds. But so the Project Development Fund process is working through. You both the Southern members here and the Public Accounts Committee know of the way that the project has been developed. The public knows that because there have been press releases about the way this is being done. There's been a procurement process. I've been accused in the House of Keys and Tim Wood of, various things to do with messing up the procurement process, which I haven't done. I'm supportive of the process in general, but it's just one of a great number of projects in the Project Development Fund process. It's just one of the huge demand on public funds from the education system.
That's the Treasury Minister Chris Thomas speaking at the Public Accounts Committee. Well, Mr Glover's constituency colleague says he's recontacting key players in an attempt to keep pressure on calls for a new Castle Rushen High School. That's Arbury Castle Town and Maloo member Jason Morehouse, who says he's frustrated it's being pushed back to the next administration, but is hopeful there's still the potential for a funding vote ahead of September's election. Well, Rushen MHK, also the former Infrastructure Minister, Michelle Hayward, has also been sharing her thoughts on the delays.
I was actively working with Dr Allenson as Treasury Minister, and the whole Castle Rushen project, we've pushed a really sort of like timeline to make progress on that, and we were were expecting to be able to have spades in the ground by the summer. We were expecting a Timbal decision before summer recess. I know the current Treasury Minister said, it's outrageous that the former minister doesn't know what the costs are. It's gone out for procurement on a design and build, and the person who bids for those will tell us what the cost is, that what they can do for the money. So that's what we're expecting to happen. And I'm expecting the cost to be over the £70 million mark, because it's been delayed so long now, costs have just been rising, and it's a big project. But you can't make progress on these things unless you actively work out them. Everyone's, backed off from it now.
You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
Now, government accounts suggest the Isle of Man finished the last financial year under budget. John Moss joins me now. First to my, John.
Yeah, first to my.
What do the figures actually show?
Well, on the surface, it looks positive. The government is forecast to have come in about £9.6 million under budget for the 25-26 financial year. That's largely because it brought in much more money than expected, not because spending pressures disappeared.
And where is that extra money coming from then?
Mainly tax. Overall income was expected to be around about £37.8 million higher than planned, with income tax alone bringing in about £37 million more than forecast. Now, Treasury says that reflects how tax was collected during the year, but it's warning that this kind of boost isn't likely to continue at the same level in future. I hear you ask, if income is up, where are the pressures? Well, let me tell you, the biggest one is, you guessed it, health. The Department of Health and Social Care is forecast to overspend by about £15.8 million, largely because of the cost of running Manx Care. There's also what's called the mandate. Now, that's the agreed funding government gives the Manx Care to deliver a specific set of functions, and that's expected to be more than £28 million higher than planned before extra support is taken into account. Well, that's partly been covered as Treasury stepped in with a £10 million contingency fund, effectively emergency funding, to help plug some of that gap. But the underlying pressures are still there, things like higher service demand and the cost of specialist care.
So do we know anything about other areas of spending?
Pensions are another big factor. Superannuation, that's public sector pensions, is expected to go over budget by more than 11 million. And benefits paid through national insurance are also running about £10 million higher than expected. That's mainly due to rising pension costs.
One thing we know is departments themselves have had to tighten their belts. They've had to stop recruiting, etc. How are they managing?
Oh, most are broadly on track, but they've been working within tight budgets, as you mentioned. The report says departments were asked to find around about £9.8 million in efficiency savings. So things like holding off on recruitment, cutting back spending, managing services more tightly. But there are still pressures, for example, in policing, prisons and education, particularly supporting pupils with additional needs.
So what's the overall takeaway from this then?
Well, let's summarise simply. The government is likely to have finished the year under budget. We don't know for certain, but there are still a few months to take into account. But finishing under budget is mainly because of stronger than expected income, not because costs are under control. And some of the biggest pressures, especially on health and pensions, are still very much there.
All right, John, thank you very much for that. Well, 13 minutes past five. The government insists there's still a very low risk of meningitis outbreak on the island. It's after two students died of the disease in Kent last month. Amy Griffiths has more details.
Of the 20 confirmed cases there, all needed hospital treatment, with nine placed in intensive care. Cabinet Office Minister David Ashford's been responding to a written Timwald question about the island's stock of vaccines and the potential risk of an outbreak here. He says we have sufficient stocks of relevant vaccines and there's been no change to our vaccination policy or the island's preparedness arrangements. When responding to potential gaps in immunisation, Mr Ashford argues they're due to gaps in uptake rather than vaccine availability, and the focus remains on maintaining strong routine coverage and improving uptake and catch-up where appropriate. He also emphasised that vaccination is still one of the most effective public health interventions we have, and encouraged all members not only to support vaccination, but to avoid amplifying anti-vaccine rhetoric, which he says risks undermining public confidence and making any gaps harder to close. Finally, Mr. Ashford insists the risk of an outbreak while students are home for the Easter break is very low and certainly not impacted by the recent outbreak in Kent. He says meningococcal disease doesn't spread easily without close and prolonged contact. Despite admitting university students and particularly first years are a recognised higher risk group compared with their peers, it doesn't mean there's a material increased risk to the wider Isle of Man population at this time. Mr. Ashford says there's no evidence before him which suggests any change in risk here that would warrant a change in policy.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
Well, let's take a look on the roads to begin with. The Mountain Road is closed from the Ramsey Hairpin to the Cregna Bar. That closure in place 24 hours a day until no later than 3:30 on Friday afternoon. The closure is for a selection of works to be undertaken, including TT prep. The section of road between the Bungalow Bridge and Victory Cafe will be open at times to provide access to the Victory Cafe, the Snaefell Summit Cafe and the Mountain Railway from Sulby and the Thaltewyl Road. Of course, the Cregna Bar pub will be accessible from Hilbury and the Cregna Bar Back Road. Elsewhere in Cueg, temporary lights are at the bottom of Cueg Hill near the railway bridge for sewer works. In Braddon, there are temporary lights on the Braddon Road just up from Braddon Bridge. Over in Peel, temporary lights on the promenade near Crown Street, 24 hours a day for work at the pumping station. And in Castletown, temporary lights on Douglas Road between KWC and the airport, 24 hours a day for water main works. All looking good down at the steam packet, so we'll take a trip down to Ronalds Way Airport where we can take a look at the arrivals board to begin with. The 5:30 Loganair from Manchester, that's delayed by a little bit, not due in until 10 past 6. Similarly, the 7:55 Loganair from Liverpool, that's not going to be coming in until at least 20 to 9. On the departures board, only one thing to be aware of, the 6 o'clock Loganair back to Manchester, to Liverpool, apologies, that's not going to be on the runway until at least 20 past 6.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by
Quayside, Quayside, 664417.
Head to Quayside Tyres and Service Centre on South Quay Industrial Estate.
Quayside!
Hello, this is Andy Wint, and Rob Callister, MHK's next on Man in Line, amongst other positions. He's currently political member for the Cabinet Office on the Select Committee on Poverty and is in the hot seat as chair of the Planning Committee. He topped the polls in Onchan in 2016 and 2021. So what does he have to say about the Isle of Man's future? That's your future. Call Man in Line answer phone on 682 631 or talk directly to Rob Callister, MHK, on Man in Line tomorrow at midday on smart devices, on air, online, on Manx Radio.
You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
Approaching 18 minutes past five now, statistics about freedom of information activity will be published quarterly by the government. Siobhan Fletcher has the details.
The anonymous data will be compiled by the Office of Cybersecurity and Information Assurance and be published by the Information Commissioner's Office. It will provide a rolling 12-month overview of requests made to government departments, boards and offices. Government says this will provide clearer insight into how FOI rights are being exercised and how public authorities are meeting their statutory responsibilities. Justice and Home Affairs Minister Jane Poole Wilson said the decision to publicise these statistics reflects our shared commitment to transparency, accountability and strong information governance across the public sector. Information Commissioner Alexandra Delaney Bhattacharya says when decisions and actions affect the public, it's important that they're open and accessible. Transparency fosters trust and is central to the public's right to information. The ICO is planning to host a training session for the public sector on FOI handling, which is designed to improve the approach to requests and build confidence in responses.
Siobhan Fletcher there with that report. Now, this weekend, a mum from the island, alongside a group of her friends, will run the Manchester Marathon. Despite having, let's say, very little running experience, probably more than me, though. But Rebecca Dalrymple is determined to complete this mammoth task to raise funds for the NHS facility, which has been helping her family through an incredibly difficult period in their lives. In 2024, when her son Hector was just 5 years old, he was diagnosed with a rare brain tumour which required a 6-week course of proton beam therapy at the Christie NHS Foundation Trust. Now the team want to give back.
So we were over there and he would tend to have his treatment Monday to Friday, and then we would have weekends to do, you know, whatever we wanted with that time. And the Manchester Marathon was on one of the Sundays, so it was a lovely day. We went down to cheer people on, and with the Christie being based in Manchester, there's quite a lot of people that are running it for the Christie. So it became a bit of a game then with my kids to spot the people with the Christie t-shirts on and see if we could shout their names and get them to high five us on the way past. And then when we went back into the centre the next day, Hector designed his own poster to take to the next marathon. And that was really then when I thought, okay, let's give him a reason to bring that poster. Yeah. So
you can imagine yourself running, yeah, and seeing him at the side.
It is quite inspirational. I am not a runner in any way, shape or form. I never have. I've never enjoyed it. But when you're there, you know, you're watching it and you're thinking, okay, what is my excuse for not being able to do this? And then, you know, you think about all the children, because the thing for me is it's not just about Hector. You know, we met loads of children there that were all having, they were having the same treatment, but for different reasons. And, you know, some of those children, it was to extend their life by a few months. For other children, it was to save their lives. There were a lot of them that were having this treatment and had a really high chance of, like, their cancers returning and stuff. And so, you know, for me, I just thought, what is my excuse to not get out there and do something?
Right.
And unbeknownst to me, my friends had the same thought, so I didn't have to do too much persuading.
That's Rebecca Dalrymple speaking to Lewis there. You can find the full interview available as a podcast over at manxradio.com. Now, a project to try and convert a grass bank here behind Manx Radio on Douglas Head into a wildflower meadow has now entered its fourth year. It's the combined effort of the presenter Howard Kane and the Manx Wildlife Trust's community ranger Hannah Phillips. We're checking in on the status of the project this month. The pair say they're starting to see a difference in biodiversity in the area.
You can see a really big difference, I think, first of all with the grass height. So, I mean, I was, before we started recording, I said to Howard, oh, it looks like it's been freshly mown. And you said, oh, no, it hasn't for, well, since last year. And I think it's because we've been managing it in this way for wildflowers. We've been cutting the grass and then we've been removing it. The nutrient level, I think, is starting to go down. And I think you can see the evidence of that now, which probably means that the grass is growing more slowly. While I could imagine that the grass on the other side, they maybe leave the cuttings when they've cut them, or maybe they're even... Well, there you go, or they're feeding it. So there's more nutrients in the soil, which is making the grass go faster, which is therefore, unfortunately, not allowing any wildflowers to grow. And also the colour difference as well. I mean, maybe it's not necessarily what loads of people want, but on this side where Manx Radio is, the grass is lighter, there's sort of more yellow, there's actually lots of different colours in the grass because there's lots of different leaves from different wildflowers growing, while on the other side it is a really vibrant, just bright green. And again, that's because of the nutrients and the fact that the grass is being fed and it's only grass that's growing there, rather than you know, over on the Manx Radio side, that it's much more biodiverse and there's lots of other things growing. I mean, I can see sort of you know, mosses and things under where we are. You can really see sort of a patchwork of yellow and green and different shades of green, and it's lovely. I think we're starting to really see the fruits of our labour.
Hannah Phillips and Howard Kane speaking there. Now, preparations are well underway for the 2026 Isle of Man triathlon season, a sport which has seen noticeable growth locally in recent years. Ahead of the first event on the calendar this month, Manx Tri Club member and 2025 Islands Games medalist Clara Isaac explains why she thinks triathlon and other endurance events have been enjoying rising popularity.
It's such a great achievement. And, you know, what an amazing thing to be involved in, you know, sport and health and really pushing yourself to the limits. I think it's absolutely fantastic why it's become so popular. You know, it's the same with marathons. And I think as we were talking about after COVID, you know, a lot of us had stepped into kind of the realm of sports, and it is a really incredible way to test yourself. And it doesn't matter what age you are, I think is really important. So when you're racing these distances, it can be, you know, like 18-year-olds right the way up. I think that one of the ladies who did the world championship, someone was 82 years old. So it is not age discriminatory. You can continue to improve as you get older. And what kind of sport, you know, can you do that in? You see it in running. You definitely see it in triathlon. And I think that's what makes it so impressive and really enticing.
The community side of things, you say it's a really friendly, a really welcoming community as well, particularly for those who may consider starting out in triathlon. Because of the demands of what triathlon can involve, it can be quite intimidating to some people to get involved. And what do you say to those who come in for the first time, dip your toe in the water a little bit, to make them feel a bit more welcome and a bit more at home in something that is, by its nature, competitive and can be quite challenging?
Yeah, it's so true. I think when I first, because I only started 2.5 years ago, and I remember that feeling of how daunting it was. But all it took for me was to step onto poolside to realise how I didn't need that feeling. Everyone was so comforting, so reassuring, and the support around the course is absolutely incredible. And I think what you need to do is do it for yourself, not for anyone else. And when you set your own personal goals, going out and achieving them, there's, you know, no feeling like that.
Clara Isaac speaking to Rob Pritchard. Well, let's take a look at the latest sports brought to you by The Print Shed. Rob Pritchard joins me now. Fastamai, what's the latest?
Fastamai, first of all, this evening, organisers of the Manx Grand Prix are paying tribute following the death of a rider at this year's Bob Smith Spring Cup in Scarborough. Aaron Sadler died following an incident in the Supersport A Race 1 at Oliver's Mount on Saturday, the 11th of April. He had been due to make his Manx Grand Prix debut later this year. In a statement, the Manx Motorcycle Club says it expresses great sadness at Mr. Sadler's passing, adding he made a lasting impression on all who met him. The MMCC is extending its thoughts and deepest condolences to Mr. Sadler's family and friends at this time. Moving on, and two of the Ardern and Drug Unlimited Division 2 promotion hopefuls meet in a big clash as part of the latest midweek Isle of Man football fixtures getting underway this evening. Another 2 days of men's fixtures are scheduled today and tomorrow, with tonight's focus on 10 matches across the top two divisions. Among the pick of the ties, Castletown, who sit second in Division 2, travel to Moran in third, who sit just 3 points behind the Southerners but with 4 games in hand. Elsewhere, just 2 points now separate the top two sides in the Canada Life Men's Premier League, Corinthians and Peel, with both in action this evening as part of the top flight ties. Peel, 2 points back on their rivals, but with 2 games in hand, hosts Ramsey, whilst frontrunners Corinthians will be desperate to keep up the pace at the top when they take on St Mary's in a repeat of the 2026 ECAP FA Cup final 2 weeks ago. You can view a full schedule of this evening's Alabama football fixtures at manxradio.com. And also in football, FC Isle of Man face their penultimate game of the season this evening as they travel to Barnoldswick Town in the NWCFL Premier Division. Both FC Isle of Man and their host head into tonight's meeting separated by just 3 points and sitting side by side in the table in 20th and 19th respectively. Tonight's match kicks off tonight at the Silent Night Stadium at 7:45 p.m.
Rob Pritchard, thank you very much. Gura Mayad, well, that is it for Update this evening. Thanks very much to newsreader Amy Griffiths. Up next is Island Life. Chris Kinley has greatest hits from 6 o'clock. John Barker's folk show from 9. And then, of course, Dave Moore taking you through till tomorrow with After Hours. I'll catch up with you tomorrow, same time. So until then, take care. Bye-bye for now.